So yeah, so why be a warrior? Is for not wide boy warrior. Well, I haven't managed to sort of tie that in, so it might come spontaneously, but otherwise I think we're pretty much on why be a warrior. So Sanganista last night referred to this phrase, be a human being first and a Buddhist second, or be a human first, a Buddhist second. I'm really pleased he said that, actually, because it's very important to me as well, as something about kind of like, rather, I'm not interested in Buddhism as this sort of thing that is just imposed kind of onto us. Yeah, that's not what I'm interested in. That's organized religion, which I'm not that bothered about, actually. What I'm interested in is life, kind of life being made sense of and coming up. So you could say, I don't know if I can quite express this, but you've got, here's life, and the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, the true nature of reality, are an expression of that. So we go from life to the Dharma, rather than just taking this whole abstract stuff and splodging it on top of us. So hopefully that's what I'm going to do this morning. Because it's important to me. It's like, if the teaching of the Buddha is true, then it applies to life. The Buddha said that the truth he taught helped all beings to transform. So that's really important. Is that true? To check that out. So I'm not going to do a lot of theory this morning, actually. Mainly what I'm going to talk about is stories and examples, sort of illustrating and exploring this theme. And I'm not actually going to talk about the Buddha very much at all either. But that's okay, actually, because As I was just saying, well, the Dharma is an expression of reality. So actually, there's lots of things which the Buddha would have agreed with, even though he didn't say them himself. There's lots of, if you can bring, hopefully what I'll do is I'll bring some degree of awareness and perspective to the stories that I tell, which will enable them to illustrate Dharmic or Buddhistic points. That's the plan anyway. So why be a warrior? And it's very much grounded in this thing, well, for like the quality of a warrior. It's sort of like, well, we need to step into life to practice Buddhism in a way. So it's like, it's very much about making that step. But actually that step will continue. It goes on and on. It's not like, this isn't like a beginner's level thing that once you've done it, you never have to do again. As with almost every aspect of a Buddha's teaching, we do it. We continue coming back to the same truths more deeply or more subtly or more principally or more something. There's an expression Sangharakshita uses which says more and more of less and less, or there's no higher truths, there's only deeper understandings. So the reason I'm saying this is because some of what I'm going to say may be familiar to you. You may feel like you're already embarked on this journey. Well, good, fantastic. As James said last night, he feels like he's a peaceful warrior. Well, we all will be on this journey to some extent by the fact that you're here. And this is an evocation of do more, go deeper. So that's the plan. That's what I'm going to try to do. So first of all, let me ask you a question. And this is a story question. Who's the greatest warrior from the Fellowship of the Ring? No, I don't think so. That's not meant to be a completely call and shout thing. So I'll tell you what I think. That's all right. So let's go through them. Is it Glimly? Is it Glimly with his badass axe wandering around with a beard, kind of being a dwarf? Dwarfs are great warriors, surely. That's obvious, isn't it? It must be him. Is it? Who else have we got? Well, Boromir. Boromir's a great warrior of men, but he ends up dead at the end of the first movie, so it can't be him. What about Legolas? Legolas is pretty badass, isn't he? Like, you remember that bit in the third movie where he kills the big elephant monster? Like, that's a pretty hardcore warrior. Or is it? What about Gandalf? Gandalf's wise, but he's a wizard. Can you be a wizard and a great warrior at the same time? That's a bit confusing. Maybe it's Aragorn. After all, Aragorn ends up the king. He's the king of men. He's the guy who, in the extended version, kind of cuts off that evil dude's head right at the end, and they have that big battle outside the gates of Barad-dûr. Is it him? Leave you to wonder about that one. We'll come back to it in a bit. So, why be a warrior? I'm gonna talk in, there's a few stages. Basically, I'm gonna talk about why, and then I'm gonna talk about how, and then I'm gonna finish off with a little bit of kind of more personal stuff, or a bit more kind of, I'll end up drawing it all together. So fairly straightforward. So why be a warrior? This talk, and I believe Buddhism and the Dharma in general, all centre around a single statement, which if you disagree with, I don't think any of you will disagree with it. Let's hope not. And that statement is, life has meaning. That's a basic principle that Buddhism, that the Dharma is based upon. Life has meaning. We do not live in a random mechanicalistic universe. Our experience of consciousness, no matter how complex that may be, no matter the mystery of it, is not reducible to science. Even once, you know, who knows what they're mapping at the moment. They mapped the genome and they said that would make sense of human experience. They then said, oh no, actually, it's the interaction between the genomes. Once we've got that mapped, then we will understand humanity. No, they will not. They will be able to do amazing things with that information. They will be able to use it to incredible good advantage for all of us, and potentially for ill advantage as well. But that will not describe life. That will not... Because you cannot pin life down. But life does have a meaning. Maybe that's something you can explore in your groups. First of all, like whether you agree with it or not, maybe you don't. Maybe you do believe consciousness is an epiphenomena of mind, to use that expression. By which I mean that, yeah, we're just an array of chemical and electrical processes firing off, and we just wander around doing stuff and then we die. So yeah, you can explore that. So, for Dharma, Buddhism, and of course, many other human systems of thought and ways of exploring life, all agree with this basic statement. This is not the exclusive preserve of Buddhism. As much of what I'm going to be saying isn't. It's broader than that. It's more deep than that. It's more human than that. So, life has meaning. Well, what is the meaning of life? Well, that's a much more complex question, which I'm certainly not going to endeavour to answer. Maybe it's better to say that life is meaningful and leave what the meaning is up to all of us to work out, which ultimately is what we need to do. But I'm going to lay out two broad categories of meaningfulness that I'm going to explore in this talk. The first one is that life is meaningful because of other people and higher values. They interlace with each other. So other people, higher values. Basically, it's not just about us. It's not just our little lives, doing what we want when we feel like it, trying to get as much pleasure as we can, trying to avoid as much pain as we can. There is more to life than that. And as I say, those two sort of overlap each other. And the second reason that the Buddha suppositions that life is meaningful is because of the possibility of growth and development. So again, this overlaps with higher values. So there is more to being a human being than simply eating, sleeping, getting a job, going to work, getting a pay rise, having babies. Although actually that in itself is growth and development, so that's not necessarily... in denial of this truth. Basically, there is somewhere to go. We can become more than what we are at this moment. And that can be expressed in loads of different ways. In a way, I'm not so bothered about the expressions. Like, obviously, the Buddhist tradition expresses that through the ideal of enlightenment, but I want to stay broad from that. It's just the possibility of human growth and development. So those are the two reasons why we may choose or may seek or may need to become a warrior. But we need to go into that a bit more. Why does the supposition that life is meaningful? Why does that require us to become a warrior? Why does that ask us to become a warrior? Well, let's start off with doing it for others. So let's come back to The Lord of the Rings. Who's the greatest warrior in The Lord of the Rings? Well, for me, it's quite obviously and categorically Sam.
I thought that as soon as you said it.
Good, we're on the same page. We're on the same page. So why is Sam the greatest warrior of The Lord of the Rings? Well, let me tell you. It is, and I tell you this, for me, this is the emotional centre point of the three movies. It's the key moment. So we're getting towards the end of the first movie. Frodo has gone off and looked for the wood. He's had the encounter with the ring-obsessed Boromir, who fails. He's met Aragorn, who passes but cannot help him. And he's going to Mordor alone to cast the ring into the crack of doom. And he's out on the boats, paddling out across the river. And Sam comes down onto the shore and calls after him. And Sam says, "Frodo, Frodo, wait for me." And Frodo says, "No, I'm going." And Sam says, "No, you must wait for me," and wades out into the water. And Frodo calls back, "Sam, you can't swim." And Sam keeps on going into the water, out beyond his depth, and starts to drown. And at that point, Frodo comes back and pulls him out of the water. So at that moment, Sam has become a warrior. He'd probably become a warrior before that, but in that moment, he secured his position as the greatest warrior in Middle-earth. Because he did not want to be there. He did not want to do that, but he did. He did it for his friend. And that's what makes us a warrior. We do what we do not want to do, where we do not want to go, we go. So for me, that's the strongest and most evocative scene in that movie, because it so clearly evokes that moment of heroism, which I find the most strongly moving moment of human consciousness, actually. I don't know about you, but I find again and again, time and time again, particularly in cinema, there's moments when that human state, that human moment of consciousness is evoked. I consistently find myself moved to tears, sometimes in quite embarrassing films. So I don't know if you remember Ice Age 2. There's a particular scene in Ice Age 2 when one of the mammoths kind of has that moment of heroism. He does what he doesn't want to do for someone else, and he's drowning or something. I think it's drowning as well, actually. And I'm moved to tears by Ice Age 2 because a being is doing what they do not want to do for the benefit of others. What higher expression of human spirit can there be? Well, I'll leave that for you to explore in your groups, but for me, that is the highest expression of human spirit. Yeah, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this, but I will. So I find it quite interesting that I find that so moving, because I wouldn't necessarily expect that to be the case. Sanganista last night mentioned this book, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. I have to say, I don't particularly like the book. I've tried to read it at least three times, and I've never managed to read about more than half of it yet, probably put together. So I've never been into this book, yet there's something about what it's talking about which deeply resonates for me. So I say that in some ways, if you're thinking, oh God, they're going to be banging on about this book all the time and I don't get it and I don't care, well, kind of look for your own ways in. Kind of feel that's what I've had to do. So doing it for others, going where we don't want to go, doing what we don't want to do, but doing it for our friends. Obviously strongly evoked in war movies as well. But what about, doing it for higher values? I think there's an overlap here. So doing it for higher values, our sense of truth, justice, human dignity. What is right? I think this is another reason why we might step onto the path of a warrior. And often this will be interlaced with the other. So it's very hard to sort of, be a warrior for truth. That's going to be in relation to other people. So these two definitely overlap. So I'll tell you a story from my own life to illustrate this point. So probably somewhere between about 10 and 12 years ago, when we were still scallywagging around Colchester, and although practicing Buddhism, still drinking and all of that, I was at a club night in the Colchester Arts Centre, that maybe some of you know it, and I was there with a whole bunch of friends, some of whom were interested in Buddhism, some of whom weren't, and we were there having a moderately good time, didn't particularly enjoy it as I remember, but... And as I say, there was a whole bunch of people there. There was one of my mates who I'm actually quite critical of. I think there's things that he does which I really don't agree with. And he had his girlfriend there, who I don't particularly like. But nonetheless, the story gets better. So we're there, we're kind of bopping away. It's a bit of a cheesy night. And I'm there with this girl. We're kind of dancing away at the front. And her boyfriend's off somewhere else, probably getting stoned or something like that, I don't know. And there's two big, slightly aggressive, tattooed guys. Maybe they're squaddies, I can't remember. Anyway, they start hitting on this girl, who I know. And I'm quite uncomfortable. In fact, as time goes on, I become increasingly uncomfortable. It's quite complex, because it's like, well, I don't know this girl very well. I know she's in a relationship. I don't know how happy she is in this relationship. Maybe she quite likes big, butch, squatty guys hitting on her. Who knows? But nonetheless, I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel okay, actually. This does not feel okay. So but they're definitely like, I don't know how much taller than me they are, but they're definitely twice as wide as me. And there's two of them. And there's just me and this girl. So I'm sort of here dancing away. And I start kind of doing this gesture, this what we call a mudra, and it's the mudra of fearlessness. It's the mudra of conviction. That picture of Tara there, she's doing it there. So it's, you're saying, and it's important because it's not a push, it's not kind of get out of my face, but it's just like, it's kind of, it's more grounded that as saying, well, don't, there's something about this that isn't okay. It's like, you want to change the situation. It's a mudra of action, but not forceful action. I'm doing this, and sort of like I'm dancing around, kind of like doing this. So, you know, kind of psychically saying, back off, guys, leave her alone, she's not into this. Maybe my Buddhist mind powers weren't strong enough in that moment. Maybe they were too drunk to be able to pick on it, but nonetheless, they carried on hitting on her. In fact, they were probably getting worse. And so at a certain point, a crucial moment arose where, what am I going to do? They're not going to stop, so I've got two choices in this moment. Either I go somewhere else, or I do something. Yeah. So if I go somewhere else, I go somewhere else with the knowledge that I've run, that I'm afraid, and that I've not expressed my values. I've not lived the life that I seek to live. And in that moment, I couldn't do that, basically. So I stepped in, whatever that meant in that moment, I stepped in, and basically I said something along the line of, guys, I don't think she wants you to do that. And surprisingly enough, they weren't that impressed by that either. But I said, who are you then? And I'm like, I'm her friend. And they're like, her friend? Well, you're not her boyfriend. You're not her brother. Don't tell us what to do. And remember, two of them, twice as wide as me, tattoos, Friday night, drunk. Colchester's a garrison town, so you've got quite a high incidence of drunk squaddies. This is probably around the time of they went into Afghanistan, so they're probably back on leave, pissed up, looking to relieve some tension. So it's like, guys, I really want you to leave her alone. And miracle of miracles, they didn't beat me up and they did leave her alone. Hooray! And life went on. And I'd be very surprised, I'd be unbelievably surprised if either of them remember that night. I'd be pretty surprised if the girl remembers that night, actually. But I do. I lived up to my values. I expressed my values. In that moment, I did what I felt needed to be done to stay true to myself. So the reason I cite that as an example is because it gives us the range, yeah? So you've got Sam, who risks his life to save Middle Earth from the darkness. And you've got me saying to two squaddies, here, mate, can you leave that girl alone? So there's the whole range of human experience between those two moments. But actually, they illustrate the same point. They illustrate the point where we step up. And that's what it is to be a warrior. So stepping up, we've got doing it for others, doing it for our values. They interlink because values and people are connected. Sam had the value of freedom, although it was he was acting for his friendship for Frodo. He wouldn't have done it for the abstract value of freedom of Middle-earth. He did it for Frodo. I helped this girl because of my sort of abstract value of dignity and human freedom, but actually it was in relation to another human being. So they interlink. But again, actually, personal growth, stepping up, is about personal growth. So let's talk about stepping up for a moment. What happens? What would happen if we never did it? If we never step out, if we never step out, if we never try something new, if we never be brave, well, we'd be stuck, we'd be confined, we'd be constricted, we'd be limited in a tight, painful, constricting, fixed sense of self. And aside from that, the good in the world would not be done. There's a little saying which I can never quite manage to get right, but I'm going to try. It's something along the lines of, for evil to triumph in this world, all that needs to happen is those of good conviction do nothing. I've completely misquoted that, but you get the point. It's like, for evil to triumph in this world, all that needs to happen is for those of good conviction do nothing. So we need to step out. We need to express our values. We need to take that risk. But that's scary. And that's why we need warrior energy. It's scary to step out. It's scary to try something new. It's scary to be brave. Let's just be completely straightforward about that. If you're not scared when you're stepping out, then you're not stepping out. And you don't always have to be scared, just to be clear. I'm not saying life always has to be scary, but actually, in that moment when you're stepping into something new, fear will arise. Maybe not always. I've just got carried away and overemphasised that. But oftenly, it will be scary, particularly if you're doing something new. Doing something new, you won't feel comfortable because it's new. So sometimes we choose to step up, to step out. Other times it just happens. Yeah. So going to war. People don't choose to go to war. People don't choose to be a warrior in that situation. It just happens to you. Not everyone does become a warrior in this sense. Some people just go through it having a horrific time. Other people just go through it getting into hurting other people. Neither of those are warriors, true warriors. That's they're in other categories, which I'm not going to mention. So sometimes we choose, sometimes it just happens. I didn't choose that moment with that girl in that nightclub. I would have rathered those two squaddies hadn't hit on her and I hadn't had to say something. Absolutely, categorically sure of that. But that's what happened. I had to act. But sometimes we do choose, or we choose to some extent. Sangharakshita, the guy who founded this Buddhist tradition, talks about the crucial situation. The crucial situation. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Do you feel it's like, oh, that's a bit racy? He's using this phrase back in the 60s when everyone in our Buddhist movement were your age. So he was kind of like, come on, guys, let's go. The crucial situation is the moment that makes a difference. It makes a difference in the world and it makes a difference in our lives. And that may be great or that may be small, but it is a crucial situation. Here, now, something needs to happen. So we can choose to put ourselves in crucial situations. We can choose to step into moments which will ask us to step up. Like in some ways, maybe for some of you, coming here on this retreat feels a bit like that. I know a lot of you haven't been here before. I know quite a few of you haven't been on retreat before. So maybe part of you, maybe some of you are having that kind of like, oh, this feels a bit scary and it feels a bit new. And I don't know if I want to be here and I don't know if I want to be doing this and what's going to happen. Well, you've chosen to step up. You've chosen to step out. You've chosen to be a warrior, to place yourself in a new situation where you can live your life more fully and express your values and find out what those values and life really is. So I congratulate you on taking that step, and I agree with you in recognising that it can be scary. As Sanghanista was saying last night, I remember the first time I came here as well, and I was definitely scared, definitely didn't know what was going on. And I had moments where I gave in to that fear and just sort of curled up. And I had other moments where I stepped out and I kind of, I became more fully myself. And they can be really small moments. Like, just to, again, going off my plot, I remember this one moment, we were sitting around in one of these little study group things, as we'll do after this talk, and people were talking. I was really new. I'd been meditating less than 2 months, and people were talking, and they're talking about, you know, the Buddha this and the Buddha that. I'm like, okay, well, I've got no idea who the Buddha is, but I know what the word means. But then people were going on about Bante this and Bante that, and I'm like, they're using this word a lot. Who's this Bante? And I kind of felt this tension in me. It's like, I don't know what's going on here. And I had this, I remember it actually, I had this moment where it's like, do I just swallow this and not embarrass myself because everyone else obviously knows what's going on? Or do I say something? Yeah. So that was a moment where I had a clear choice. I could either kind of like let myself say small and narrow and constricted. Just, it's a small example, but nonetheless, I could feel it's like I'm just kind of, I'm constricted in a way, I'm shutting down. It's like, oh, don't know me, don't notice me, don't know that I don't know what's going on. Safe, hide safe. Or do I step out? Do I take the risk? Do I say, excuse me, who's this Bante everyone's talking about? So I did that, and somebody said, it's a name for Sangharakshita, the guy who started this movement. I said, oh, all right then, and the conversation carried on. That's what it's like sometimes, you know, like, you know, I spent at least several minutes working up the courage to ask that question, and it probably, you know, like a minuscule flicker on everyone else's consciousnesses. Again, I'd be incredibly surprised if anyone else in that room remembers me asking that question. I do. I see, you know, and that's important. So anyway, the crucial situation, when we choose... Well, the thing is, we probably don't realise what we're getting into. We probably don't know what we're starting. When we step into things, we probably don't know where it's going to go, because we probably, actually, if we did realise, wouldn't do it. And again, maybe some of you are feeling that right here, right now, on retreat at Padmaloka, thinking, if I'd have known this is what it was going to be like, I would not be here. But you're here now, you've stepped up, you've stepped in, so give it a go. So just to illustrate that point a bit more, I'm going to tell you some more stories. So, and I'm going to do a bit of a plug as well at the same time. Clever. So we've got the Sri Ratna Buddhist community runs a charity called the Karunar Trust. The Karunar Trust works in India and Southeast Asia, helping some of the most disadvantaged and deprived people on this planet claim their human dignity, find the spirit to be warriors and transform their situation based on Dharmic values but without a explicitly Buddhist frame of reference. Karunar Trust. The way that they raise their money is that they invite, using that word, invite Buddhist practitioners in the UK to go on a fundraising campaign for them and raise money on the streets and towns and cities of England. I know Tansel's done a Karunar appeal. Maybe anyone else? No? There you go. So there's Mokshadaka, of course, for Mokshadaka has. So there's two people who can tell you more about this if you find this bit interesting. So Karunar invite you to go and raise money for people in India who you've never met and you don't know very much about. And they do this in quite an interesting way. The first interesting way they do it is by not telling you what to do. In fact, on your very first night, they say, they give you some of these, they've got these very nice little books, and they say, here you go, go and knock on some doors and try and give people these books. That's it. That's what they say. Believe it or not, that can be a somewhat scary experience. It can be distinctly uncomfortable, but it's an invitation to step up, to step out, to find out what life is about. I did a Karunar appeal back in 2007, and it was a difficult and painful experience. The reason it was difficult and painful is because I had quite a lot of narrow identity invested in this. For a start, as you may find out over the week to come if you don't know me already, I'm quite talkative, I'm quite sociable, I'm quite friendly, and in certain situations I'm quite confident. So all of that resulted in me having a strong amount of identity invested in being good at this. I thought I was going to be good at this. In fact, I'll go even further from being good at it. I thought I was going to win, and I wanted to win. That is number one start for a painful experience. So I want to win, I expect to be good at this, and yet I find myself consistently afraid, scared, holding back, and not putting myself in, not stepping into the experience. So shall I, I'll just give you a quick illustration of what that's like in this particular. Karanara appeals are interesting because they're like, you know, remember Groundhog Day? They're sort of like Groundhog Day, because you just keep on having the same experience and you've got an opportunity to do it in a different way. So what I was doing, because I was afraid, holding back, constricted, limited, scared, and with an unacknowledged identity invested in it that I wasn't living up to, is that I'd go and knock on someone's door, and emotionally I'd knock on the door 6 or 7 o'clock on a Thursday night in busy London. I'd knock on someone's door, they're eating dinner or watching EastEnders, they come to the door and I say, "Hi, I'm from a charity. You don't want to talk to me, really, do you?" And they'd say, "You know what? No, I don't." And I'd say, "Okay, I'll leave you alone then," and walk off. Now, believe it or not, that is not a very successful way to raise money. That is not the plan. And I tell you what, for free, it's a really good way to have a painful experience. Yeah. So, like, in a sense, I was staying safe. That's what was happening. I was not putting myself in. I wasn't taking the risk. I wasn't trying. So I was safe. But I was just getting more and more stuck, more and more constricted, more and more painful. It sucked. It really sucked. I remember just having night after night, just getting depressed, basically. And so then I'm sort of like knocking on the door going, "Hello, I'm from a charity, you don't want to talk to me, do you?" And they're like, "No, I don't, you weirdo." "Well, okay then." It really sucked. So yeah. Don't do that. If you ever do a Karanara appeal, I tell you for free, don't do that. So what I've got written here is, don't be a passenger in life. Don't be a passenger in your life. That's what I was doing. I'm just on the bus, but I'm at the back and I don't want to play. But I'm still on the bus. There's this expression, I don't know where it comes from, every life must have 1,000 joys and 1,000 sorrows. So I really lived my life on that basis. But actually, I don't think it's completely true. You can live a life with 1,000 sorrows without getting any joy. If you don't engage with life, if you don't live life, sorrow will still come to you. Like in that situation, I was still having a horrible experience. It still sucked. I wasn't getting any joy out of it because I wasn't trying. You've got to try. If you try, then maybe you get sorrow, but also you get joy. So what did I need to do? What did I need to do as I was going around those doors? Well, I needed warrior energy. This is one of a few times, probably in my life, where I've actually used this phrase. I remember walking around the streets of London thinking, I need warrior energy. This is not working. Like I'd gone there wanting to be a lover, being all friendly and charming and eloquent, which I can do. Just wasn't working. Just was not working. I needed warrior energy. What did that mean? What did that look like? Well, in this case, warrior energy just involved me making the simple statement of conviction to myself and the world. Actually, it could be even simpler than I've written down here. For what the warrior says is, I care and it's worth caring. That's what the warrior says. I care, it's worth doing. Says it and then acts on it. That's important qualification. So basically what I needed to do was go to those people's doors and say, here I am, I care about this. And in a way, that's the magic and the mystery of Karanara door, Karanara fundraising. It's an invocation to live life, to step up, to be there. And actually, when you do that, magic does happen. If you stand there, if you say to someone, I care, then not always, and obviously you have to do this carefully and contextually, I'm not suggesting that when you go out for a walk or go over there that you just you walk up to people in the street and say, I care. That may or may not get a good response. It's a sort of a more subtle internal process than that. But basically that's what being a warrior invites you to do, say, I care about life and it's worth caring. So when you start doing that, life unfolds, life opens up. So paradoxically, for me, it felt a bit paradoxically during this Karanau appeal, in the latter half of it, I felt that I accessed this warrior energy. I started saying, I care. Then the love bit suddenly came back on board and it started working for me. So just to finish the Karanau plug section, I remember on the last night of the appeal, in the last half an hour or so, you have targets, you have sort of targets that you're aspiring to make in terms of the amount of money you raise. And I hadn't quite hit my target. I was about 20 quid a month off of my target. So I'm going around, and I must admit, I felt quite competitive about this. I wanted to win. I wanted to hit my target, and I wanted to beat the girl who was in the lead. And I was trying this on people. Because I was getting a bit more cocky, so I was knocking on doors, and people were kind of on the edge and saying, well, I might do it. And I'm like, I remember this one guy, it was around a World Cup time, and this guy answered the door, and he's like, I need to talk to my girlfriend. I'm like, come on, mate, you're into football, it's a competition, I want to beat the girl, just sign up. You can cancel the standing order in a month, just sign up now. Boo! Yeah, that didn't work. That didn't work. So I wanted to win, but also I wanted to live life, I wanted to be wholehearted and full. So the last moment of Groundhog Day, doing these Karanau appeals, you do it for 6 weeks, 5 nights a week, 3 hours a night. You knock on a hell of a lot of doors, probably, I don't know, a couple of thousand. So I'm coming up to the last door of the appeal. I've got a good feeling about it. You don't do this cold. You sort of knock on the door and say hi, and then you sort of interact with them. And then the idea is that you come back after a couple of days to sign them up. So you're not doing a sign up on one knock. You sort of give them the book, and then you come back to talk to them about it. So there's this one family which I've visited a couple of times. Get on well with the wife, husband I've met a couple of times. Friendly guy, kind of nice interaction, nice vibe. But last time I saw them, a couple of days earlier, the guy said, "Well, I like what you're talking about, but you're organised religion. And I'm not into organised religion, so probably not." But anyway, this is the last door, and I've got 20 quid to go to make my target. And I go, I'm walking down the road, it's the last door, I'm already half an hour late because I've been pushing, going over the edge. And as I walk down the street, and I turn onto their pathway, their door's open. It's not completely open, but it's like 45 degrees open. And that felt significant. I've seen thousands of closed doors in the last 6 weeks, and here is an open door. So I go up and I'm sort of like, hello. You know, I've been, it's sort of weird because it's like I'm a stranger, but I've been to this house 3 or 4 times. So you've kind of like this weird connection. And they say, oh, hi, come on in. You know, it's Friday night, they're having dinner. It's about 9:30 by now. They've put their kids to bed. They're like, do you want a glass of wine? I'm like, yeah. Having a little chat, having a nice chat. Oh, it's lovely. And I'm like, yeah, but what about the money? Anyway, we just have a nice little chat. The woman's saying, blah, blah, blah. She's saying, oh, why are you? The husband says, right, I'll do it. And I'm like, yes. So, thank God. He then proceeds to give me a lot of money, which means that I've, in one fell swoop, I've hit my target, I've won the appeal, and I've got the biggest standing order of the whole appeal. And I have to say, in that moment, I feel elation probably like I've never felt in the entire rest of my life. Really did. I really, really did. People tell me, when I tell this story, it sounds like it's all about winning. That's not the point, just to be clear. So why did I feel elated? What was that about? Well, I'd put myself in. I'd tried. I'd actually gone out on a limb and invested of myself. As I say, I tend to live my life on three guiding principles. That of intelligence and quick wits, charm and luck. Those are the three guiding lights of my life. And I recognise that is not a completely stable and reliable things to base my life on. But in this moment, I had cared, I'd put myself in, I'd been a warrior, and it worked. And that's why I felt elated. When I win out of, and this is the point about winning, like I've won loads of other times, but when you win with luck, you don't feel, I've never felt elated, because it's not really yours, you haven't really earned it. I earned that, I put myself in, and I earned it. At some point, I'm going to get onto Buddhism. Don't worry, it's coming. This is Buddhism. This is about life. So that last point about winning. So I think there's two different kinds of war. There's two different kinds of warriors. This is a little sub point. But I think it's worth differentiating. When we're talking about glory and fame, that is not what a true warrior is motivated by. A true warrior sees that glory and fame are not sufficient reason to, you know, to fight, to battle, to kill even. This was, I felt this strongly illustrated recently. I'm watching for the first time, and my girlfriend's re-watching the Harry Potter films. And we watched Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire a couple of weekends ago. And there was a particular moment which, as I say, really evoked this for me. So Harry's already a warrior. He has seen death. He has fought for that which is meaningful. He's a warrior. Yeah. The other kids aren't. So when the Triwizards tournament trophy appears, and they all want in, they all want fame and glory. They're all trying to put their names in the thing, and they get pinged out because it's got the anti-age shield and all of that. Harry doesn't want any of it. He is completely disinterested by glory and fame. So forget it. I'm really pleased that something else is going on, and it's not about me. And then, as we know, he is put into the Triwizard tournament, and all of a sudden, everyone blanks him. Even his best mate blanks him. And why do they do that? Because they're motivated by glory and fame. That's what they care about. That's what they want. And it's so superficial. It's so passing. It's so meaningless. And it's only at the point after he fights the first dragon and he nearly dies that everyone starts realizing, you don't want to do this, do you? You wouldn't choose this. And they say, oh yeah, and they recognise that it's not about glory and fame. And they come back on side. So that's not what a warrior is about. That's about being a hero, a young hero, to use Jungian language, if you're familiar with that. The young hero who seeks glory and fame. Well, the young hero has to die in a not pleasant way. A warrior doesn't seek glory and fame. A warrior acts for meaning and life, because it's worth it. And sometimes when you do that, you do get glory and fame. Let's go back to Sam and Frodo again. Sam and Frodo. So we're at the end of the third movie, and all the lords and ladies of Middle-earth are gathered for the coronation of Aragorn. And Aragorn, peace has returned. The king is in his place. The land is good again. And I find, very moving scene, genuinely effective scene, where they all bow down to Aragorn and Thingamabob, girl whose name I can't remember, and it's good and it's right and justice has been restored. The king is in his place, but then they all turn. The lords and ladies of Middle Earth bow to Frodo and Sam and the other hobbits. What does that tell us? They are getting fame and glory in that moment, but it's not false fame and glory. They've earned that. They've gone out and they've done what's needed to be done for the good of others, even though they didn't want to go. That's what made them warriors. But the film doesn't end there. That's not the end of the story. If it ended on that scene, in a way, the warrior's journey would not be completed, because the warrior's journey is completed at the real end of the film, when we just see Sam at home with his kids, just living life. That's what the warrior is about. The warrior doesn't want it. The warrior doesn't want fame and glory. He just wants life. So I've talked a lot about why fight, why be a warrior. The commitment to living a life of meaning and value, a sense of connection with others, and that is worth going out of our comfort zones. It's worth stepping into the crucial situation to do that which needs to be done, that is worth doing, that will help us grow and develop, will help us become more than we are. So what do we fight, and what do we fight with? Well, obviously, hopefully, none of us are ever going to be in the situation of Sam, in that explicitly. I genuinely hope I'm never placed in a situation where I need to resort to physical violence to protect that which I feel is worth protecting. I really hope that never happens to me. I hope it never happens to any of us. But there's more to fight than that. There's every moment in life. There's the moments where we need to step up and step out and live up to our values. And more likely what we will encounter in our lives is fear. The fear of doing what's right. The fear of in that moment saying, actually, this is what, this is, whatever, just saying, actually, you know what, something like that. Fear, stepping into fear, overcoming fear. And that can happen even within your own mind. Meditation, going deeper. On this retreat, you might experience aspects of yourself. You might come into contact with parts of yourself which are scary, which you don't want to look at. Well, the warrior's journey involves facing, recognizing, acknowledging, stepping into those spaces. Bodhinaga is going to talk more about this in a couple of days' time, with much more explicit reference to the Buddha as well. You'll be pleased to hear. But yeah, so stepping fear. Fear is that which limits, stops, constricts us. And fear is very interesting, isn't it? Because what are we afraid of? Well, at root, what we're afraid of, and this here's the Buddhist bit, is we've got a limited, fixed sense of self. I am me. And we try to protect it, and we try to protect it from the world, and we try to affirm it. The ego, to use that language, the sense of self. We do have a sense of self, but this limited, fixed, constricted, narrow sense of self, which is in fact the source of all our suffering. That is what experiences fear. That is what fears. So what do we do about it? Well, in a way, what I'm doing is I'm inviting you to step beyond that. Every time you try something new, every time you take that risk, you're stepping beyond that limited, narrow sense of self. You're stepping out into a wider experience of being. Who knows where that could take you? So with the whole warrior thing, I was kind of looking for an image to evoke this last night. I've got an image which may or may not work for you. So let's see. But I think the qualities are important. So as warriors, what do we arm ourselves with? What do we fight fear and limitation with? Well, we ride the horse of honesty. We wear the armour of vulnerability, and we wield the sword of conviction. What do all those terms mean? Well, honesty is the root virtue in a way. Honesty is the root quality. Honesty is what allows us, honesty is what makes us transparent, which takes the fear away, which loosens that ego identification. If we start being honest about it, that will just naturally change, dissolve, transform. So the armour of vulnerability. The armour of vulnerability is when we acknowledge weakness and limitation. The ego seeks to make itself strong, to keep itself safe. That can never work. It will always get broken. Strength comes when you acknowledge weakness. I really deeply believe that, actually. In the moment when you say, when you acknowledge your experience, you become strong. You become invulnerable. You can no longer be hurt because you've acknowledged your own experience. It's worth saying, comes with a significant help risk again of do this appropriately. Yeah. Don't go out into the streets of Sirlingham, let alone London or Nottingham, and say to people, I feel vulnerable, and expect that to go well for you. That's not what I'm referring to. I'll come back to that in a minute. But yeah, so the armour of vulnerability. Another one of my favourite sayings is, a coward dies a thousand deaths, the hero dies but one. So that, for me, that evokes this spirit of vulnerability. The coward in us, the part of that the coward is the limited sense of ego, which is constantly defending and hiding, and it's always worried, and it's always about me. What if I do this? What will they think? If I say that, what will they do? If I go over here, what will happen? Blah, 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 blah. All the time in our heads. I don't know if you have this. I can have it in mantras quite often, the sort of, you know, the desire to come into a mantra more strongly, or particularly start... Sometimes we do harmony things. I just find that terrifying. And I sort of sit there, and I can sit there for minutes trying to convince myself that I don't want to do it. And actually, I'm just scared, and I need to step up and do it more. See if I do that or not. I wasn't going to say that. The example occurred to me. I was like, I don't say that. But there you go. Vulnerability, honesty, acknowledgement. The hero dies but one. If you live life to the full, even when things go wrong, you just pick yourself up again and get on with it. You know, I'm sure this is where this is like, you all know this. It's like, actually, you get something wrong, just acknowledge it and get on with it. People don't mind. You know, we're so kind of locked in our self-preoccupation. Actually, if you cock up and say oops and do something about it, people will be okay. You won't be dead. You just move on, you grow. So that's the armour of vulnerability. The sword of conviction is just that moment when you say, I care. You step in, you take action. Whatever that may be, whatever that may look like, can be great and it can be small. So, basically, to be a warrior is to be true and to be real. True to our own sense of values, real to our own sense of the unfolding possibility of ourselves, true to a sense of connection with other human beings, and the fact that there is more to life than just us and staying safe. That's what it is to be a warrior, and that can manifest in a million different ways. Being a warrior will not always feel easy. It will not always feel natural. In fact, it often won't. That's why you need to be a warrior. That's why you need the courage and conviction, the honesty and the vulnerability to step into situations. And we do need to do that appropriately. So with the vulnerability example, something Sanghanista mentioned, I lived here last year. One of my most satisfying moments last year to develop mentally in terms of my own development as a human being was when I was sitting in meetings with Arya Bandhu and a couple of the other guys who live here, all of whom are good friends. Here's the important appropriate part. So I'm sitting in a meeting with Arya Bandhu and a couple of other good friends, and we're talking about something. We're talking about a business point, and I'd start feeling something. I'd start feeling fear, and I'd start feeling constricted. And I had a choice there. Well, I had a choice. I could have let that feeling grow. I could have let it dominate my experience, or I could step out. I could do something. And I was pleased with the times when I was able to step out. And what I did was, I said, I just need to tell you guys, I'm feeling defensive, basically. We were talking about stuff, and there was something which it would have been good if someone had done. It would have been good if I had done, and I hadn't done it. And so I could feel my emotionality, my defensiveness, my limited sense of self getting caught up and invested in the general conversation. So I just had to say, look, I'm feeling defensive about this. I'm not saying that because I want them to go, oh, there, it's okay. I'm not saying it because I want them to do anything different. I'm doing it because that's what I need to say, to be honest and clear and get on and kind of come back into the conversation, not be a passenger in life, not just sort of sit there being upset and defensive and reactive and all this, that and the other. Just like, oh yeah, I'm feeling defensive. I can drop that. What are we going to do right now? The fact that I didn't do something 2 months ago is basically irrelevant in this conversation. What are we going to do now? I'm serious, that, and I only did it like 2 or 3 times, but those were some of my most personally proud moments in my year last year. That's where I felt like I was being a warrior, and that was good. So to carry on the small things can change lives example, because I really do mean this, and it's something about just having the courage to communicate our values, communicate our lives. I've been talking a lot recently in Birmingham. My job is to communicate the Dharma more widely to people. It's taking the Dharma out. I'm working to spread the Dharma outside the True Ratna Buddhist community. And something I've been really banging on about is that it is not about running Buddhist classes and this, that and the other. Well, it is about that. But actually, every moment, you're all going to have a moment where you can do that. At the end of this week, you're going to go home and you're going to see people and they're going to say, where were you last week? And every single one of you will have a choice about what you say. You could say, I was on holiday. I went away. I went away with some mates. Or you could say, I went on a Buddhist retreat. In that moment, that is a moment of a potential to step up, to step out, to express your values, to say something that could change someone's life. And I mean this quite literally, it really could. So Sanghanista, when he introduced me, didn't tell all of the story, actually. He didn't tell it quite as I remember it anyway. So it was an important part of the story which he was missing out. And that was, as he said, when I left university, I was a bit of a mess. I was lost. I had my connection to my sense of ideals and purpose in life was a thread. And I was clutching onto it for dear life, but it was really not strong. It really was not strong at all, and it was very dependent on two people, one of whom was Sanganista. It was very, very dependent. My sense of purpose and ideals in life was very dependent on my friendship with him. And one week, he didn't come to the pub on a Wednesday night. Like, I really was angry. I really was angry because I was so dependent on him as a connection to some sense of purpose and meaning in life. I really was angry with him. And on Friday, I said to him, probably somewhat passively aggressively, "Where were you on Wednesday?" And in that moment, he had a choice. He had a choice, and he took the choice, which brought me to this place here today, when he said, "I was at the Buddhist Center, you should come." You know, like, I've told him this before, so he knows. But that, I really do, that moment really did change my life. I really would not have gone to the Buddhist Center. I really would never have gone, well, never. I really wasn't, I was a million miles from going to that Buddhist Center. I didn't know it existed. I'd never heard of the place. I was interested in Buddhism, but I was nowhere near acting on it. And it's because of him that I'm here today. So you can change people's lives just by the simple act of saying, "I was at the Buddhist Center last night." So yeah, so that's why we should be warriors. Because by being a warrior, we can live life. I suppose it's as simple as that, actually. It's like, to be a warrior is to be in life. And we've just got those two choices. We can be a passenger in life, being buffeted around by stuff and by fear and by resistance and by and constricted, or we can step in, we can step up, we can live. We can express our values. We can acknowledge the connection we feel with other people. The fact that we care. It's as simple as that. Being a warrior is acknowledging that you care, acknowledging that that's scary, and then doing something. It's as simple as that. What we can do is be honest. We can be honest with ourselves and with others. We can acknowledge our vulnerability, the limitation, the fear, the lack that we experience. And through acknowledging it, we don't deny it. That's crucial. For the hero denies his fear. The young hero denies his fear, and that's why he dies. The warrior knows that he is afraid, and he knows that it is reasonable to be afraid, but he does it anyway. So yeah, we can be honest. We can acknowledge our vulnerability. We can express our conviction. And if we do that, we will be a warrior. We will be practicing the Dharma. And we can transform our lives and the lives of others. Thank you.